Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back, folks. It's Friday, May the 3rd. Tomorrow is National Play Outside Day. Now, that's convenient because down in Alabama, we'll be off for the weekend, so there's no good reason for your youngins to pick up that otherwise sorry phone of theirs. Today, we have a lot of politics, and stick around for a great discussion on the trouble finding and affording childcare. Now, anybody who's been through it has really been through it. I'm Mike Morgan, and we're down in Alabama. The Alabama legislature Tuesday night came as close as it has for a quarter century to putting a lottery on the ballot, and there hasn't been much movement on the issue since. Still, it's the big talker on Goat Hill and well beyond. AL.com's John Sharp reports that even Donald Trump Jr. is weighing in on the topic. Tweeted Trump Jr., "Whenever I ask anyone from there what's going on in the state, this is all they talk about. What's their Senate refusing to let the people vote on a clean bill to legalize the lottery and fund education when 45 states already do it? Wouldn't they rather keep the billions of dollars in Alabama instead of sending it to other states? Makes no sense to me," end quote. Now, he ended the tweet with an exclamation point. That's a genetic thing. Note that he said clean bill, but that doesn't mean it's lottery only. As a matter of fact, this package also includes some casinos. And one of the concerns over the legislation, according to Atmore Republican Greg Allbritton, is that it did not include a fourth casino operated by the Porch Band of Creek Indians that had been in a previous version of the package. Allbritton is one of three senators who voted yes on that earlier package and switched to no on this one. Alabama Senate President Pro Tem Greg Reed, a Jasper Republican, said there was a lot of talk and debate about the package on Thursday. Quote, "I don't know what the outcome will be other than membership is working on the issue." Two more items of note from the legislature. AL.com's Mike Kaysen reports that the bill to adjust the deadline for political parties to certify presidential candidates has full legislative approval and now awaits the governor's signature. Now, the result of Governor Kay Ivey's approval will be that President Biden can legally be put on the ballot in Alabama, even though the Democratic National Convention takes place after the original deadline. Now, both bodies of the legislature passed the measure unanimously. Similar situations have occurred in the past for both parties. It made a little more of a splash this year when Alabama's Secretary of State Wes Allen notified the Democratic Party that its convention is too late for Biden to be on the ballot. The state spends billions and the feds spend trillions. If we start saving now, we should be able to buy everybody involved a 2028 desk calendar for the next go-round. And the last one, the Alabama House of Representatives has passed the general fund budget by a 103-0 vote. It calls for non-education government spending of $3.4 billion, which is $360 million more than the current fiscal year's budget. Now, that's riding a 16% increase in applicable revenues last year. Our legislators will be back to work on Tuesday. There are three working days left in the session. Now, sexual harassment is so 1970, and I ain't saying it's dead, though. AL.com's Hannah Denham reports that Chipotle Mexican Grills Company has to pay $50,000 in a sexual harassment lawsuit settlement involving a male manager and female cashier at the burrito chain's Prattville location. A Chipotle spokesperson said the company is not admitting wrongdoing, but simply wanted to be done with the case. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission had filed the suit, claiming there were daily sexual advances, comments, conduct, and contact. Don't put up with it, folks. Hey, let's take a quick break. In just a minute, John Hammontree is going to speak with AL.com's Elena Bookman about some reporting she's been doing on finding and affording childcare. Stay with us.
Okay, Elena Bookman, welcome into the Down in Alabama virtual studio. You recently partnered with reporters across the country to examine the state of affordable child care in the United States. What were your big takeaways for child care access in Alabama, and how do we compare to the rest of the country?
I think one of my biggest takeaways for child care here in Alabama is the fact that a lot of mothers especially are really, really struggling. And I think, of course, it's a national problem, but I think one of the really big reasons that we discovered that mothers are struggling is because of a lot of the legislation that's going through or is not going through. And so one thing that I heard consistently from the mothers that I did speak to is the fact that they are hoping not only for more child care, but also quality and affordable child care. And so that's something that they're hoping to see in the legislature and also from other community members to help offer to them.
Yeah, I think you reported that in 2022, almost 85,000 families needed access to childcare, but didn't have any affordable or quality options in their communities. And that as many as 19% of working parents in Alabama said they had to miss work due to childcare issues. You know, I mean, that's taking people out of the workforce. Tell us about the parents that you're hearing from who are struggling with these decisions.
Absolutely. One of the first parents I was able to speak to was Adrian Burnett, and she had one of the most unfortunately compelling stories I had ever heard about her struggle with childcare. She has a child who's now, I believe, 4 years old, and so he aged out of a program that really helped them financially in terms of childcare and allowing her to balance her work. But now that he was, you know, in between and he was no longer eligible for that program because he'd aged out, she had to file for bankruptcy. She had to forfeit her car. And she also drives DoorDash and Uber Eats in order to afford to continue paying for childcare. So without the car, it was just this really awful domino effect. And it was simply because of the lack of affordable childcare in Birmingham. And there's also another story of another woman who had moved. Her name was Rachel Besson, and she moved states looking for affordable childcare where she lived. It was, she compared it to a mortgage payment, the amount that she'd be paying every month. And Rachel Besson got to Gadsden, Alabama, where she found that there still were not affordable childcare places or facilities in her area. And she'd been on a wait list for years for childcare. And so once she finally found it, it was still high in cost. She was still having to take care of her child at home, and it was interrupting her workday as somebody who was working from home. And she went in depth about how far back she believed she kind of fell in her career, that she may have been able to rise up in her career, earn more money if she was able to work in person, if she had affordable childcare.
Yeah, I mean, as I listen to you talking about this, this mirrors certainly my wife and my experience. We have a 2.5-year-old. He was born when we lived in Tuscaloosa. We tried to get on waiting lists when my wife was 4 months pregnant. We learned that, you know, if you really want to get on the waiting list, you need to do it before you even find out that you're pregnant. If you know that you're pregnant, then it's too late. We were on those waiting lists for a year. By that point, we had moved up to Birmingham to be closer to my parents so that, you know, they could help with childcare costs. And, you know, moving from Tuscaloosa to Birmingham means that you're moving into a more expensive house, but you're doing it in order to be accessible to family and have childcare help that way. You know, we had conversations about, is it more affordable for me to drop out of my job and take care of the child at home? Because most of my paycheck is going towards daycare. Once we did finally find daycare, it took us about a year and a half. And then now the daycare that we pay is, like you said, it's a mortgage payment. And I think that these are the stories that, you know, 85,000 families are looking for care. More families have care and are struggling to pay for it. And so tell me a little bit about the, you know, what parents are struggling with, moms, dads, you know, grandparents. This is something that affects a lot of people. I know people whose parents, whose, you know, the grandparents have dropped out of the workforce to take care of kids because the parents couldn't find affordable options.
Absolutely. So one of the big things that I heard from every single mom that I spoke to is how much the wrestling between deciding to orient themselves toward either childcare, just dropping out of the workforce completely to take care of their children or picking up more hours so they can afford to pay for childcare, is how much it's affecting their mental health. And I think that was an aspect that I didn't completely realize was such a big factor in the childcare crisis. Also talking about Adrienne Burnett, she, when I called and up to get an update, you know, the story was about to be posted, and she talked about how she had begun fainting and having panic attacks because of how much she's struggling. And she had gone to the doctor to, you know, see what it was about and see why that was. And the doctor told her it was stress. And so she was diagnosed with depression and anxiety. And a big, big part of that was childcare and the fact that she couldn't afford it. And there was also another mother that I'd spoken to, and her story is a little bit different in terms of like her family structure. So her name was Kyra Bloxham, and she has a partner because Adrienne Burnett is a single mother, and Kyra Bloxham has a partner, and they both work. So they have that dual income coming in, and it's still a problem for them, a big problem. And she told me specifically that before she was wrestling with balancing work and affording childcare, she didn't have anxiety. And now she goes to therapy because of her anxiety with all that she has to balance. And it's you know, it's just a really, really big struggle. Rachel Besson talked about how she knew that her family was doing fine, that they were getting off okay, better than most parents. But she knew that if she didn't have to wrestle with childcare and balancing work and childcare, that her family could thrive. And it's really, really unfortunate that I'm sure hundreds, if not thousands, of families feel the exact same way, that they are just scraping by, as Adrienne Burnett said, that she was just surviving because of childcare. And if there were more affordable options, if there were more quality options, then I'm sure families across Alabama could thrive and join the workforce without any worry about what's going to happen to their children or, you know, who's going to take care of them.
And, you know, this is a problem that affects so many different things. You know, we talk about fertility rates dropping in the United States, and, you know, some people may have one child and choose not to have another child because they can't afford, you know, two children in daycare. Some people may not have children at all because they feel like they can't afford to pay for them. You know, it affects labor participation rate. People feel like they can't work. And then it's also, you know, this is a problem that's pretty hard for the market to address. To get more and higher quality daycare workers, you need daycare centers that offer higher pay. Well, to offer higher pay, the daycare centers either have to charge families more, which is pushing more and more people to the financial brink, or making it where it's only affordable by the very rich, or they have to figure out other sources to collect money from, like philanthropies and charities and the government. And if it comes from the government, some parents may fear that that means paying higher taxes, which means that they might be sending other people's kids to daycare when they choose to keep their kids at home. So obviously there's a lot of factors at play here, but the Alabama legislature is considering a big bipartisan package of legislation right now. What would that legislation do?
And so that big tax credit legislation, I've spoken to a few advocates, one of them being the Women's Foundation of Alabama. And they talk about how with their work with other mothers in Alabama, how much child care tax credits could help. So one of the big things is that it would allow for facilities that cannot pay their you know, their teachers and their workers a living wage, it would allow for them to be able to pay those workers a living wage. On the other hand, I did speak to an Alabama-based advocate, and she's from Project Say Something. Her name's Camille Bennett. And she talked about how child care tax credits, while she's not against them, she believes that the legislation should also be focusing on like direct assistance to mothers and parents. And one of the big things was making sure that co-pays are eliminated, and making sure that mothers and parents are receiving better child care subsidies. And so one of the big things that that would help with is just not only ensuring that facilities can pay their workers, but also the fact that, you know, mothers won't have to worry about such big payments anymore. And so there's also some other solutions that, I mean, I think it's, like you said, it's a really big and nuanced issue that, you know, one fix and one piece of legislation will not solve the childcare crisis, unfortunately. But one of the really big things that I saw was it was West Alabama Works, and they have just a new program that's actually training more mothers specifically. They've mostly been seeing a lot of single Black mothers entering their program in order to be able to be licensed to set up their own childcare facilities from home, their own home-based childcare facilities, which is huge because in that you not only create jobs, which, you know, is also helpful for the workforce, but you'd also be creating more seats, which is really, really needed here in Alabama. And so while the legislation works on that, from what I've heard from advocates, the tax credit bill will be extremely helpful. There's definitely other things that should be done.
Yeah, I mean, just to illustrate the point, you know, the tax credit bill will incentivize employers to provide daycare options to their employees. Well, we just saw, you know, this week in Birmingham, UAB announced they're opening a second daycare center. They already have one of the best rated in the city, one of the most in demand in the city, and already the one that they've announced is full. And so, you know, it's not going to be able to serve all UAB employees. And so this, you know, anything that we can do to help working parents and help people who choose to, you know, have kids and work as well is good. But like you said, it may not address all of the problems to come. What do you hope that our listeners take away from this reporting? You know, even people who may not have kids, who may choose not to have kids, how does providing affordable childcare access affect the state as a whole?
Yeah, that's a big one. I think mainly, like, when I started reporting on the story, the biggest takeaway I wanted to for readers to get was just the fact that mothers, parents are struggling all across Alabama. And it's not just about personal responsibility. It's not a problem about budgeting or being more responsible parents. It is a very systemic problem that needs systemic solutions. And so what I'm hoping readers, just the everyday reader, to take away, whether that be parents or people who are planning to be parents or people who maybe find that they never want to have children, is that that there is definitely work to be done, especially here in Alabama. Legislatively, in the communities, among childcare facilities, there's still work to be done in order to solve the childcare crisis. There is, unfortunately, no one solution. And I hope that a story like this can not only bring awareness, but also bring change. I really hope that the mothers I've spoken to and in the mothers that I didn't can really see change through reporting like this, with their stories being told. The way that they've struggled, the buzz that I've spoken to, it's really, really awful. And I really hope that they can see change.
Well, thank you, Elena, for your time. If you're listening, please go check out her stories. You can find them in the AL.com Education Lab. And I'll toss it back over to Ike to take us out.
Thanks to both of y'all. Can you put a future kid on the list? That'd feel a little like Babe Ruth calling his shot in the World Series, I think. Thanks to everybody out there listening. Hope y'all have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.